Mr. Bowler? Good morning to you.
James Bowler, appearing on behalf of the defendant, Chief Justice of the Court. This matter, we defended a case brought by a real estate agent contending that they were entitled to a commission, even though a specific provision in the listing agreement said that if the sale were made to John Q. Bachman, his trustee, no commission would be paid. It is true that Keller, plaintiff and the realtor, had the right to continue to market the property. They had the right, under paragraph 23 specifically, to deal with John Bachman. But they knew full well, because the contract provision provided, that they were not to have any commission if the property were sold to Mr. Bachman. It was sold to Mr. Bachman, there had been a long course of negotiation prior to the listing agreement being signed that said that that between John Bachman and Mr. McGowan, the attorney for the estate, that's the reason why the provision was in the listing agreement. They'd already had the buyer, potential buyer. They'd submitted three contracts before it was sold. They had submitted a proposed contract before the listing was even signed.
So what are we to make of the purchase agreement and the language in the purchase agreement?
Purchase agreement simply says, and it's a very common provision, paragraph 28 of the purchase agreement, it's a very common provision in real estate contracts, both for sale and for leasing, that identifies the brokers who are involved on behalf of the parties, and it provides who is to pay the real estate commission under those circumstances.
This is a beg your pardon.
Yes.
Are you referring to the form of purchase agreements?
Yes.
That are commonly used?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true, Your Honor. To me, this language is very similar to that. It's not really significant. These contracts, the purchase contracts, were prepared by Mr. Bachman. They say specifically any commission, it says that a commission is due pursuant to the terms of the listing agreement. It doesn't say pursuant to the terms of the listing agreement, paragraphs 4 and 22, but not paragraph 23. And what the Sarpy County District Court did here was to amend it themselves, really, to say there is a commission due pursuant to paragraphs 4 and 22 of the listing agreement, but not paragraph 23.
So maybe you've answered this question, but what is the material issue of fact here that is supposedly a problem?
The material issue of fact is how do you interpret paragraph 28 and the listing agreement? How do you combine? You have to combine the purchase agreement and the listing agreement, because the purchase agreement specifically says look to the listing agreement as to what the commission is, if anything.
So you're saying it's not a question of fact, it's an error of law.
Well, the court specifically said that this is a summary judgment proceeding, and the court said that we didn't produce sufficient evidence to counteract the prima facie case that was made. I think that's the wrong standard to apply.
But I think Justice Castle is trying to ferret out exactly what you think went wrong. Is it that the exclusion, is that right? Is that what you all call it? In paragraph 23 with respect to Bachman was not read properly as a matter of law. Is that your position?
I think that's the case, Your Honor, or I can't tell whether or not the court found some reason to just completely disregard it. It seems they would have to disregard it because it's paragraph 23 is clear. You can go ahead, Keller can go ahead and negotiate and represent the buyer of the property, but because it is John Q. Bachman, there will be no commission paid on this property. So I hope that answers the question.
Is it possible that the agreements are ambiguous as to the question of whether the agent is entitled to a commission?
They could be ambiguous, Your Honor, and in that case, we supplied sufficient evidence in the form of two affidavits from the actual parties who contracted and entered into the purchase agreement, explaining the background and explaining why there was a specific exclusion.
So it would, is the, if we find it ambiguous, is the proper result to send it back for a trial as to that extrinsic evidence, or is it your position that the extrinsic evidence is so one-sided in your favor that your client is entitled to summary judgment?
Your Honor, I pointed that out as a one of our propositions of law and one of the briefs that we asked for. I can see where it could be determined that it is still ambiguous, and I think the matter would be sent back. I think what happened, at least the matter should be sent back to the district court. No, the matter should be sent back to the county court, because that gets into our argument as far as the propriety of the jurisdiction of the court. This is a contract, post-death contract, between personal representative and the listing agent, the plaintiff in this matter. In that case, we think that the case law that has been cited with respect to 302482 is dispositive, because it says, as the court knows in the Wagner case, that matters dealing of this type, that case dealt with a attorney's fees, but it said that contracts with a personal representative are, as an administrative expense, should be handled by the county court. And that only makes sense in this case. Judge Hutton in the Sarpy County Court.
Does the county court under that statute have exclusive jurisdiction?
I believe it does, Your Honor. And I, not only does it have exclusive jurisdiction, but I think the court in Wagner said, prospectively, from this point on, these matters should be handled by the county court. And that's what we're asking the court to follow here. I think that that's the proper place where this matter should be determined. It seems to make sense, because Judge Hutton has handled this matter. He actually has entered orders previously approving the sale of this property. He's familiar with it, and I think it's a less timely procedure to have the county court make that determination, which they can surely do. The other matter that is involved here is we feel that these defenses are all extremely meritorious, and that if the matter is retried by the county court, it will be successful. But we're facing now an argument that our proposing those defenses and arguments is somehow entitles them to attorney's fees for harassment and for delay. We feel that that's just completely, this factual situation wouldn't merit any sort of an award of attorney's fees under those circumstances. I reserve my time if I could. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Betterman, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Your Honor. My name is Patrick Betterman, and I have the privilege of representing Keller Realty in this particular case. Actually, what occurred here is Keller Realty entered into a listing agreement with the estate of Lieneman, under the terms of which Keller agreed to list and to promote the sale of 77 acres somewhere around Papillion, Nebraska. In that regard, the listing agreement stated that Keller was to receive a commission of 3% if there was another broker involved, and 5% if there was no other broker involved. They were to get 3% if there was no broker involved, and they were to get 5% if there were another broker involved. Paragraph 23 of the agreement provided that there would be no commission payable if there were a sale to John Bachman. This agreement was entered into on or about November of 2014, and was later amended in January of 2016 to extend the term of the agreement, which originally expired, I believe, in 15. The agreement, the second agreement, factually, that is present in this case, is a purchase agreement, pursuant to which the estate sold the property for $3.2 million to John Bachman. In that agreement, there is a provision in paragraph 27 that counsel referenced that stated in pertinent part, and I want to be clear about what it says verbatim. It stated that, and I quoted, seller, referring to the Lieneman estate, represents that Deborah Carlson of Keller Williams Realty is representing seller for this transaction. Purchaser is not represented by a real estate broker, and Deborah Carlson of Keller Williams Realty shall be entitled to the real estate commission pursuant to a separate agreement with seller. The agreement, the provision then goes on to say that each party represents to the other that there aren't any other brokers involved. And if one pops up by reason of either party's action, then the party that caused the other realtor to pop up would indemnify the other party. That is a rather standard provision.
Was your client a signer on that purchase agreement?
My signer? No, absolutely not. The purchase agreement was only signed by the parties to it, which were the estate and the purchaser.
So what is the separate agreement referenced in paragraph 27?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I was just going to go to that. It's clear, and I don't think disputed, that the separate agreement referenced in this purchase agreement was the listing agreement, which I referenced just a moment ago, under the terms of which broker in the case was entitled to a 3% commission. It's important to note,
if it wasn't sold to Joe Bachman.
Yes.
John Bachman.
Let me put it this way. In this sort of a case, we're fighting over the meaning of a provision in a contract. And a contract...
Which contract? The listing agreement contract or the purchase agreement?
The purchase agreement. Huh? And to the extent it relates to the same transaction, and the listing agreement, because whereas here you have two agreements that relate to the same transaction, they're read together.
But your client's only a party to one
agreement. But my client's only a party to one, which, as the court noted in the Men Cotton versus Klug case on the issue of the statute of frauds, the fact that the broker doesn't sign the purchase agreement is really irrelevant, whereas here it's clear in this item the situation that there are third-party beneficiary rights, because the right of the broker is specifically contemplated, and the right of the broker is provided for, that the broker gets a benefit. That's the hallmark of a third-party beneficiary situation. In this particular case, the third-party beneficiary is enforced by the fact that the purchaser in this particular case was obviating a liability that it could have to the real estate broker on some quantum merit theory or any other theory by providing specifically for it. But circling back, Keller contended successfully in the court below that what was intended here was that the buyer was to obtain the commitment from the seller, that the seller would pay the real estate commission. And when it states...
Under what agreement?
This is in the purchase agreement.
Right.
And the word...
But they would be obligated to pay the real estate commission under a separate agreement.
Under the separate agreement, which is the listing agreement, pursuant to, which we state means in accordance with. Grammatically, the words pursuant to modified the real estate commission, as stated in that. And what that is important is because in accordance with the purchase agreement, the real estate commission was defined to be the 3% and the 5% I stated earlier. Section 23 of the purchase agreement does not define a purchase, the commission. It's an exclusion provision. The court below found that the seller, in effect, intended to waive any claim or right to exclude Bachman in this case. The court concluded that it would be unreasonable to construe the agreement or to interpret the agreement to provide that the paragraph 23 would, in effect, trump the provision in the purchase agreement and not provide for a commission. In other words,
why does 23 exist?
Well, 23 is part of the listing agreement.
I think you're implying it's meaningless.
No, I'm not saying it's meaningless. I think it's very meaningful. What I'm suggesting that is clear is that there are two interpretations involved. One is that when it said pursuant to the separate agreement, they were talking about the commission provisions of the second agreement. That's what the trial court, two district judges found that to be the case.
And there's a whole cluster of things that would refer to commissions, like percentages if one or two brokers and who the players are. There's a lot of stuff about commissions.
Which defined it.
Okay.
In this case, Keller, that was the position that Keller took. The estate, on the other hand, took the position that pursuant to really modified entitled, and in effect is stating that the pursuant to is pursuant to the listing agreement, so it shall be entitled to a commission pursuant to the listing agreement, which states that there's no commission. That's crazy. What is clearly intended here is that the...
I beg your pardon, why isn't that crazy? Isn't that...
Well, because
isn't
that, you're saying...
I beg your pardon, excuse me, sir. The very purpose of the exclusion is to define a universe of potential buyers, right?
That's true.
For whom commissions will not be blessed.
That's true. But you have to remember that the first part of this sentence says, shall be entitled, which is inconsistent with the exclusion provision in paragraph 23. Because of the inconsistency in those, they should be interpreted together as 202 of the restatement teaches. The point of the matter is
well, that... Well, at summary judgment stage...
I beg your pardon?
This is a summary judgment.
It is.
So if you've got two interpretations of the contract, is this where this can be disposed of?
We do have two interpretations of the contract, but they have to be both reasonable in order to create an issue of fact, as this court in Baumgartner recently suggested in Casbrin. The point of the matter is that the estate's interpretation is not reasonable because now, the agreement...
Let me ask you one more thing before your time runs out. Is there anything in the record which would tell us what your clients did to earn a commission?
There's stuff in the record, but it's not admissible. Whereas here it's an unambiguous contract, and the extrinsic evidence is not allowed under the Spanish Oaks case. What I'm trying to explain to the court is the estate's construction or interpretation is fundamentally unreasonable because the provision in the contract says shall be entitled, then it says pursuant to the terms of a separate contract, which states that there's no entitlement to a commission. In effect, what the estate is saying is they shall be entitled to provision in this contract means the same whether it said shall be entitled or shall not be entitled. In other words, the estate's interpretation results in yes being no. How can it state that it shall be entitled in the first half of the sentence and in the last half of the sentence say it shall not be entitled? Section 202 of the restatement provides that you should look at the whole agreement. In this case, there's a provision that the broker was not represented, which only makes sense if it's interpreted the way I'm suggesting. The fact that it says that a broker's there is in effect ancillary to referring to the commission provision in 4 and 10, which changes the amount if it's 3% versus 5%. The other aspect of it is that if you read it the way the estate is reading it, the agreement means the same with or without the first two sentences. That they become mere surplusage, because in either event, there's no entitlement to a commission. The point of the matter is when the estate said that they shall be entitled to a commission, they were waiving the exclusion clause, and they were clearly referring, as the two district judges held, they were clearly referring to the position, the definitions in the agreement of what the commission was. Paragraph 23 doesn't define the amount of the commission. Paragraph 23 is inconsistent and should be read consistently by referring only to paragraphs 4 and 22 and not 23.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute and 56 seconds.
1 minute and 56
seconds, Mr. Bowler. Thank you, Your Honor. As you pointed out, this is a summary judgment proceeding. That's an extreme remedy. Mr. Betterman, several times in his summation here, talked about the fact that the court was determining what the parties intended. And I think that the only way that you can do that...
So what is your suggestion that this court should do?
This court should send this matter, should find that the summary judgment was inappropriate, should send the matter back to the county or back to the district court to dismiss and allow the administrative expense claim to be brought in county court where it should have been brought. That's what we're asking the court to do. And obviously, find that there isn't any, that an award of attorney's fees in this matter is inappropriate and not called for. So Mr. Betterman pointed out that the addendum, there was an addendum extending the time within 3 months of the time when the actual sale occurred. It specifically referred to the fact that the paragraph 23 was included. Extending it, paragraph 23 is still included, and that was made part of that extension of the listing agreement. So for those reasons, we're asking that the summary judgment be set aside, the matter be set back to the district court with orders to dismiss it, in order that the matter can be brought in the proper place where an administrative expense should be determined.
Is everything that a personal representative does with other contractors or parties in the process of administering an estate automatically an administrative expense in the context that you are arguing, or is it something special about a real estate broker?
It's something special about a real estate broker because they are licensed in the state of Nebraska. It's a special agent, I think, is the exact terminology that appears in the 302482 that says that attorneys, accountants, can't remember the other one, but other specialized agents, special agents. In this case, that's what this was. And so I believe that answers your question. It wouldn't be every single contract, but it would be one that involves a special agent.
Suppose you had a probate and you had a real estate broker who acted as agent for both the seller and the buyer pursuant to an agreement that they do so. In other words, they waive the exclusivity requirements of the real estate commission law. Where does a dispute over that commission go?
I think that would depend upon who's to pay the commission. If it was determined that by the agreement that the estate was to pay the commission, in that case it would be an administrative expense brought in county court. As part of the final contract, the buyer agrees to pay the commission, then he fails to do that, then I think the matter would be brought in district court or county court, whatever court had jurisdiction for the amount of the commission itself.
Okay. So if we disagree with that latter argument, your argument really then is this should go back to district court, either for us to decide what the, as a matter of law, the contract meant, or if we decide it's ambiguous for further proceedings.
That's right, Your
Honor. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next